This episode of the Case for Safety podcast is sponsored by Safety 2024. Registration is now open for Safety 2024 in Denver. Join us Wednesday, August 7th through Friday, August 9th to connect with your safety community and get up to speed on the latest knowledge and innovations in the field. Learn more and register at safety.assp.org. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Case for Safety podcast. I'm your host, Scott Fowler. Thank you so much for joining us. Really looking forward to today's episode where we're going to be talking about writing a safety policy, what should be in it, who should be involved, and a whole lot more. And I'm very excited to welcome today's guest here to guide us through that process, Joe Pina. Joe is a certified safety professional and vice president of EHS at Verde. Joe, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Scott. Excited to be here.
Excited for the conversation. Now, I thought we could start by, you know, talking about the role that a safety policy plays in setting everything else up after that. So, you know, how can a well-written safety policy help set the foundation for a successful safety program?
That is a fantastic question, Scott. I would say that a safety policy is essentially your foundational piece, right? If you would like to have success with your safety program, whether it's just a basic safety program or an actual safety management system, I do think that a safety policy is your core foundational document. And what I would say is that it's really three things. It helps you stay focused. It's your why. And also it helps set you up for any future initiatives you want to take on. So for instance, if you're interested in 45001, having an established safety policy is going to help set you up to achieve at least the fifth clause of 45001, which is leadership, commitment, and employee participation. There is a section there that requires that you have a policy in place. So again, three reasons, and I'm kind of going out of order here, but I would say the first reason would be it's your why. You definitely want to understand why you're doing what you're doing, and it's going to help really justify your program to stakeholders who have questions and may not necessarily understand why we need safety. And it also could help you justify your resources. And then secondly, as a safety professional with over 20 years, I've been in situations where you're pulled in so many different directions. So going back to that foundational piece, that policy will help you stay focused on your ultimate goal, right? So it acts like a compass in some ways. And then lastly, like I mentioned, if you want to pursue something like 45001, having a safety policy in place is going to help propel some of those clauses.
Thank you so much for that. That really sets a great foundation for the rest of our conversation. Now, taking that next step, you're at the beginning of this process and, you know, trying to, you know, draft something that's going to, you know, do what you want it to do. So when you're starting off that process, you know, what elements, you know, what language should, you know, safety professionals and organizations be including in those safety policies?
I am a big believer in keeping things simple. I think we get too caught up with layers and layers of complexity. Sometimes we think we sound smarter when we throw a whole bunch of stuff into a document. But we have to understand that a lot of the people who will be reviewing this document are not safety professionals. And we want to make sure that we put language and structure that's easy to understand and easy to follow. So my suggestion would be, if you're starting out, you may want to consider just three core sections. You can consider four, and I'll talk a little bit more about the fourth section. But if you're looking to establish a policy, or if you have an existing policy and you want to make sure you have the right elements in place, I would say start with your commitment to safety, to environmental health and safety, to health and safety, whatever your commitment is to safety. That would be your core section. That's where I would start. Secondly, you can include roles and responsibilities. So who's responsible for what? It's great you have this commitment to safety, but then who's going to be responsible for, you know, delivering, implementing, I love Deming's cycle, plan, do, check, act. Who's going to be responsible for that? And really delineating roles and responsibilities. Then I would say section three would be your plan. So how are you looking to drive your commitment to safety? What are those tactical things that you will be doing, or you are doing, because it is a policy that you are doing to drive your commitment to safety? It could be your risk assessment. It could be your, you know, your program with different pieces to that. So again, going back to your question, I would break it down into three sections, starting with your commitment to safety, roles and responsibilities of who's going to be driving that commitment, and then lastly, that core, you know, structure, how will you achieve your commitment to safety? And then the other, if you want to go four sections, I would also really provide definitions. That's also helpful for the internally and externally. It's helpful to provide definitions because it helps the reader understand a little bit of our terminology. So if you want to provide terminology or definitions on things like incident, near misses, what does that mean? So providing a bit more clarity in terms of how we name things and the definitions for some of our and a terminology. So again, if you want to go three sections, I would say management commitment to safety, roles and responsibilities, and then the core of the document would be your structure on how you're going to achieve your commitment to safety. And if we want to go four sections, I would go your commitment to safety, I would go with definitions, and then I would do roles and responsibilities, and then the rest would be how you are implementing and driving that commitment to safety. But again, this is open to interpretation. Everyone has their style. But my recommendation is keep it simple. Just keep it simple.
Talking about driving that commitment, and you mentioned stakeholders earlier, I'm wondering, as you're developing this, you know, there's so many different, you know, stakeholders involved. So as you're developing this policy, you know, who should be involved in that process? You know, what kind of information should you be gathering from different groups, you know, to develop an effective policy?
Yeah, that is a great question, because we don't work in silos. If you are a safety professional that's done this for many years, you know that you need allies and you need your community within the business. So I would say, as a subject matter expert, I would start with the safety professional. Because obviously we do what we do because we have an expertise in it. So I would start as a safety professional creating the policy, partner with, you know, your team, if you have a team. If you don't have a team, I would work closely with operations or a similar team to create that initial draft. Once you feel comfortable with that initial draft, then I would bring on stakeholders that you work very closely with. For instance, the human resources team, that is your BFF or your frenemy, whether whether you like it or not. I like to think BFF, but yeah, HR is going to be your core team for this review. Once you have HR, maybe you have like a workplace experience team. Whoever you think would be a good candidate to conduct that initial review, I would pull them into the conversation. And then the one that's going to check it off for you, and again, this is a very important stakeholder, is your legal team. Make sure that whatever version you have, I don't like to do anything without legal's blessing. So legal... Legal is essentially the one stakeholder that you need to sign off on your policy, from my experience. So again, I would start with operations, then bring on other stakeholders like HR, And then ultimately, you want to make sure that your legal team signs off on your policy before you execute it.
Thinking about, you know, the next step after you've drafted your policy, particularly when you talk about like roles and responsibilities. So, you know, you put that policy together, you know, how do you, particularly in a large organization, how do you best communicate that out, you know, to, you know, the different individuals, different departments, you know, everybody understands their roles and responsibilities, and you can ensure that that policy is carried out effectively across everyone in the organization?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because you can create a policy, but if no one knows about it, then it never happens. it really depends, I would imagine, on the size of the organization and how sophisticated your resources are. So, for instance, in a fairly large company, you typically have a comms team that will help drive that message. And I know from my experience, comms teams are very particular about the messaging, and they like to control how that messaging is delivered. So I think it really depends on the sophistication of the company. But if you have a comms team, leverage your comms team. But don't go to your comms team unless you have something already approved and vetted through your legal team and obviously your executives. So once you have the kind of executed policy, bring it to your comms team, and they will give you direction on how to best communicate that information. If you don't have a comms team, then I would leverage whatever communication flow you have within your company. But I would suggest that you hit different ways of communicating the information, because communicating the information is received differently by different people. So I would focus on following your formal communication plan, also having some visual aids, using things like your communication board, if you have a physical communication board, if you have a digital platform, having that be part of your website. I know that some companies do provide a very high level overview of their commitment to safety, including their policy to external stakeholders as well. So different approaches to communicating, but I would say try different things. Don't just simply try to communicate your policy using one method. I would try several, including some visuals as well. One of the things that I did in my past lives, this was maybe, I don't know, goodness, 15 years ago. We had we were very paper heavy during those times. Goodness, I feel so old. we actually had a physical copy of our commitment to safety signed by our executive, and we had that displayed in the front of, you know, of our office. So you can also have a huge banner with your commitment to safety and have your employees sign that as well, just to reinforce that messaging. But I would suggest definitely different approaches to communicating, and then try to refresh every year so that you're able to maintain that policy as well.
Perfect segue into my next question. Along those lines, you know, how can, you know, safety professionals ensure that, you know, that policy continues to be effective over time and everyone's doing what they're supposed to do? And, you know, how should they adapt it? You know, safety and health is always changing. So making sure that your policy is reflective of, you know, the current state that your organization is in.
Yeah, I would definitely consider the EHS policy like any other policy. And I would definitely partner with HR on the cadence for revising the policy and make sure that you do revise at least annually, because our companies change, right? We are in a constant state of change, and it's important that we maintain our policy relevant, especially as we, you know, enter new ages in our society with AI and everything else that comes with that. So really staying current and having a current policy, I think it's critical, because then I think you lose credibility if I come to your site and your policy is from, you know, 1999. So it's I don't know why that, you know, came to mind. Maybe it's just a song or something that came to mind. But again, it's important for us to stay relevant. And since an EHS policy is such a critical piece of your programming, I think it's important that it remains fresh and current.
Sure. And along those lines, I mean, you know, for safety professionals, you know, to be staying up to date about different changes within their organization, checking in regularly with department heads so they get an understanding of, you know, how that policy should be updated as those changes take place within the organization?
Yes, absolutely. It's important that we, you know, that we partner with these individuals so that the messaging is accurate and they understand, again, what we're trying to do, which is establish a formal way of managing our health and safety program or our safety program or our EHS program.
Anything else you'd like to add? Any final thoughts about developing an effective safety policy?
I think it's important for us to pull back from being tactical executors and really understanding the importance of being strategic thinkers. And that's something that I feel like we don't teach enough about. When you're trying to become an established safety professional, you pursue your certified safety professional designation or credential, certification, actually. Being more of a strategic thinker is going to drive success, because if you're focused just so much on tactical execution, which we have to do, it's not going to help you grow as an individual within the safety profession. And also, it's not going to help your company grow within EHS as well. So again, just pulling back from the tactical execution and be more of a strategic thinker is going to be really helpful. And I think starting with an EHS policy will set the tone for that kind of way of thinking.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much again for coming on, Joe. As we talked about, this is such a foundational piece of establishing an effective safety program. So I really appreciate you coming on and helping safety professionals understand how they can set that foundation. So thank you again.
Of course. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Case for Safety podcast. Be sure to subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and be sure to leave a review to help others find the show. You can also connect with us at ASSP.org. We'll see you next time.